Today's shir in the Daf Yomi is the Gemara in Shabbos, Daf Kuf Yud Aleph. We begin at the Mishnah about a quarter way down the page already, and the Mishnah continues in various medicinal therapies that are not permitted on Shabbos because of the gzera of shchikas samamonim, because you may come to go grind something, and that would be an issa daraisa, and therefore this gzera is a very important gzera in limiting what you can do for medicinal purposes on Shabbos. So we begin with the Mishnah. Hachoshesh b'shinav. If somebody has a toothache, somebody has pain in his teeth, so he's not permitted, lo yigma bahen es hachometz. You're not allowed to go. Now, tomorrow we'll have a discussion over here. Does it mean that you're swallowing this, or that you're just rinsing your mouth out, gargling with this? And we'll ultimately say that it's talking about gargling it. So I'll translate now. Yigama means as to go and imbibe, to go in and take in chometz into your mouth. You're not allowed to do that. However, avu metabalu kidarko, but you are allowed to go and dip something into chometz. The vinegar will have the same astringent effect in your mouth and shrink the swelling around your teeth. The pain and your toothache will be cured, and that is permitted. Metabalu kidarko, because people dip food into vinegar all the time. And therefore, this goes along with our idea that if healthy people do something, you're allowed to do this on Shabbos, even though your purpose is not for just regular eating, but it's for curative, it's for medicinal reasons. Vim nisrape, and as a result of your dipping, you become healed. Absolutely okay, nisrape, you didn't do anything wrong. Lichatchila, one is permitted to do this. Likewise, hachoshesh b'mosnov, if a person has some sort of a pain in his groin area, in his loins, so lo yosuch yayin v'chometz, you're not letting go and smear that area with either wine or chometz. Rashi explains that you're not allowed to do this. Dein odom soch also el refuah. Nobody goes and anoints themselves there with either wine or with vinegar for normal purposes. You only do this for medicinal purposes. So when a person does this on Shabbos, it clearly looks like he's doing it for medicinal purposes. Avol sochu es hashemen, which you are allowed to go and shmir oil there. That people do for a regular basis, and therefore there's no problem in doing this on Shabbos. Again, this is dealing with, there's no problem of mamachik, there's no problem of rubbing or of smearing in a non-permissible way. But when you're allowed to do it with oil, you're not allowed to do it with shemen verid. Below shemen verid, Rashi explains, shemen verid is much more expensive. Lefisha dom of your karin. Nobody would go and, so to say, waste their money anointing with oil in that area. And therefore, it's eno matzui, it's not normal for somebody to do this. And therefore, somebody who does this is muchach milsa the refuah of it. You're obviously spending the extra money over here, not for the usual reasons that you would do this, but because of medicinal purposes. And therefore, shemen verit, this much more expensive rose oil, is not allowed to be done on Shabbos. However, b'nei malachim, rich people, the children of kings, so sochin shemen verit amakosim, they can put shemen verit on their makos. They would apparently, again, be doing this because you have some sort of a wound in your groin area. And in the benefit of the shemen verit there, it's clearly proven. And therefore, rich people who do this shemen verit all the time anyway would be allowed to put it on their makos. Shekein darkon, pasuk behold, because they do this anyway. So therefore, it doesn't look, it's not mucha milsa that they would go and be doing this purely for medicinal purposes. As Rashi says, they do this even if they don't have a maka, below maka. Therefore, kings, princes can do this. Rabbi Shimon disagrees. Rabbi Shimon Omer, no. Call Yisrael b'nei malachim. We have this comment from Rabbi Shimon throughout Shas, where he says that the Klal Yisrael themselves are all malachim. We all have the status of being b'nei malachim, and therefore we are allowed to go and put on this shemen verit as well, not only princes. Morris starts off and says, Rami le Rav Acha Aricha. Rav Acha Aricha asked the following shayla, who was Rav Acha Aricha? Who Rav Acha Bar Papa? Rav Acha Aricha is Rav Acha Bar Papa. And he asked the shayla to Rabbi Yavo. What was the shayla? He said, Tanan, we learned in our Mishnah, Hachoshesh Bishinav, if somebody has a toothache, lo yigma b'hen es hachometz. You're not allowed to go and take in either gargle or swallow. We'll learn that in a moment. That'll be the question that he asks right now. Lo yigma b'hen es hachometz. You're not allowed to go and have vinegar in your mouth. That implies lemeimra the chometz male lishinayim. That implies that the reason that you're not allowed to do this is because it's medicinal. People don't do this normally. People don't drink vinegar, and therefore you're obviously doing this purely for the medicinal benefit that it will have on the toothache. But that doesn't seem to be the case. For ksiv, we have a famous statement in Mishlei that says that this is bad for you. Kachometz lashinayim, just like vinegar is bad for your teeth, uche oshon leinayim, and so too, smoke is bad for your eyes. the Pasuk in Mishnah continues, so a person who's an atzlon, a person who's a lazy person, it's going to happen to him. So therefore, the Pasuk in Mishlei clearly shows that smoke your eyes is bad, and so too, vinegar for your teeth is bad. So how can you tell me vinegar is medicinal? You see that it's clearly bad. So one says, Lokash, it's not a problem. It's not a steer from our Mishnah and the statement in Mishlei. Ha, b'kiyua depri. Rashi explains, kiyua means yayin shelo nizbashel kol tzorcho ba'anovav. Kosher l'shinayim. This unripened wine, it hasn't fully ripened. So if you put this type of kiyua, now it's not really vinegar, but it's like vinegar, and that it's not wine coming from grapes. So that is actually bad for the teeth. And that's what the Pasuk Mishlei is talking about. This kiyua depri, that's bad for your teeth. And therefore, that's what it means in Mishlei when it says that it's not good for your eyes like smoke, so too the vinegar is not good for your teeth. That's talking about this kiyua, this unripened wine, these unripened grapes. Ha-b'chala, but our Mishnah says that it is beneficial. That's talking about regular vinegar, regular chala is the word, again, for vinegar. So, that's teretz number one. Vibayi same or teretz number two. No, ha v'ha b'chala. It does say the word vinegar, so it certainly sounds like they're both talking about vinegar. It's a little bit hard to interpret the Pasuk in Mishlei is talking about this unripened grapes, kiyua. It says chometz, which means vinegar. So therefore, both our Mishnah and Mishlei are talking about vinegar. So how come one says it's good for the teeth and one says it's bad for the teeth? So it depends. Ha d'ika maka. If you actually have a maka, so then it's medicinal. Rashi explains, if you have a maka, so tzomis habakar vashinayim nirpin. If you have a maka, the swelling of your teeth will actually be benefited by the taking in of the vinegar. Hod deleka maka, but if you don't have a maka, that's mishle, it's actually bad for you. As the Gemara itself says, ika maka masa. If you have a maka, so then the vinegar will be beneficial. And that's why our Mishnah says you can't take it if you just have a choshesh shinov, if you just have a little bit of a discomfort. However, lack a maka, if you actually don't have a maka, mirafe, it's actually going to weaken the gum area, and that's going to cause you a problem. It's going to make hashinayim nirpin ruchokim zemizeh. It's going to make the teeth get further away from each other. Okay, that explains teretz number two, the stira, seeming stira between our Mishnah and Mishlei. Mora then quotes on Mishnah and says, Lo yigama ben sechomets. He said, you're not allowed to go and take in yigama. What does that mean, yigama? But Tanya, the Gemara tells us in a brisa we learned, Lo yigama upolate. The brisa specifically says that you're not allowed to take it in and then spit it out. But that implies, avu megameya uboleya. But you are allowed to take the vinegar in your mouth, so to say, gargle with it, and then drink it, swallow it. That is allowed. So that seems to be a contradiction, the brisa to our Mishnah. Our Mishnah seemed to imply it didn't make any difference whether you swallowed it or spit it out. It just said lo yigama, period. Whereas the brisa qualifies it and says lo yigama upolea, upolate. So the Gemara says, Amabaye, kitna nami masnisin. Says, no, our Mishnah also meant over here when it said migameya, it meant migameya upolate tonight. It meant that you're spitting it out. But in fact, if you were to swallow it, our Mishnah would also say that that would be okay because that looks like a regular person eating. As Rashi points out, demukach dilrufuhu, when you spit it out, you clearly weren't doing it for eating purposes, you were doing it for this gargling and spitting it out, medicinal purposes. Teretz number one. Teretz number two, that was a bias teretz. Teretz number two is from Rava. Rava Omar, Rava says, no. Afilu teimo megameo belet. No, you could even argue that our Mishnah is talking about where a person swallows it. Our Mishnah still says it's no good. But it depends. Kan lifnei tibul. When do we say in the Mishnah that you're not allowed to do this? That's lifnei tibul. That's before eating. Tibul, Rashi explains, is lifnei achila. There, it's a mutter. You're allowed to go and spit it out. Why? Shedarkon hoyo litbo b'chometz b'chol yom. They would go and gargle, so to say. They would go and take in a little bit of this vinegar every day. Varoa, and somebody seeing you do this, omer zehu tibulo. That is the normal way that a person does before he eats. L'achar tibul, but after you finished eating, also, hakol yodim shekvar saw it. Everybody knows that you already ate. V'tava kol tzorcho, and you already dipped. So, before the tibul is the dipping, we used to dip in the meal, so therefore they would go and normally have a little bit of vinegar. So therefore, the way Rava would go and reconcile the Mishnah, which seems to imply no difference between whether you sip it or swallow it or sip it and spit it out, and the Brisa would say only sipping it and spitting it out, so the Brisa is talking about Kan Lifnei Tibul. There, If a person spits it out, it's a problem. But if he swallows it, it's okay. But our Mishnah is talking about kama achar tibul. Here, it doesn't make a difference. Even if you swallow it, nobody does this after the meal. Therefore, that's the reconciliation according to Rava. Gemara questions this and says, v'neimor midilifnei tibul shari. If it's permissible to go and drink vinegar before the meal, so then Rava would have to say that it's also permissible to drink vinegar after the meal. La'achar tibul nami shari. Why is that? Because Rava holds from the principle, the Shaminali Rava, the Islay Hoel. Rava holds from this famous principle of Hoel. Basically, it says that if it's permissible in one situation, since it's permissible there, Hoel, since it's permissible there, it must be also permissible in another situation. We don't distinguish in different situations in Shabbos. If something's permissible in scenario A, it's also going to be permissible in scenario B. The Amar Rava, where does Rava learn this principle out from? Leko midi de b'Shabbos shari uviyom ha-kipurim oser. There is no such type of melacha. Obviously, food is different, but no, there's no melacha that is permitted to be done on Shabbos, which is much stricter than Yom Kippur. It's a chi of skila, as opposed to Yom Kippur, which is, quote, only just the chi of kares. So there's no melacha that is permitted on Shabbos and is forbidden, uviyom ha-kipurim oser. Since, therefore, hol de b'Shabbos shari, since you're allowed to go to the mikveh on Shabbos to do a tefillas mitzvah, so too, hoel the b'Shabbos shari, it's permitted on Shabbos, v'yom kippurim nami shari. We see that Rava holds its principle. Since it's permissible in this situation, it must also be permissible in that situation. Therefore, Rava also holds, since it's permissible to go and swallow the vinegar before the meal, it would also be permissible to swallow it after the meal, even though there's no purpose in swallowing it after the meal. But once it's permissible to do this, it's permissible. So therefore, we have a kasha. How can Rava tell us that it's the answer is the difference is whether the Bryce is talking about before the meal and the Mishnah is talking about after the meal? According to Rava, they should be the same din. So Gemara says, you're right. We slugged up Rava, so we have to retract one of Rava's statements. So, Hadar Bei Rava Mehach. Rava, once he holds this principle of Hoel, he obviously can't be giving the teretz that our Mishnah is talking about after the meal, after the Achila, and the Bryce is talking about before the Achila, because Rava would say, Hoel, they both have the same din. So he retracted his din on or explaining the reconciliation between our Mishnah and the Brisa. We have to say that he was wrong. Lifnei tibul, acher tibul, that can't be correct. Gemara says, why do you say he retracted that? Maybe that's correct, and he retracted his din of Hoel. Who says he retracted the din in explaining our Mishnah, the difference between our Mishnah and the Brisa? Maybe he retracted his din of saying that if something is permissible on Shabbos, it certainly must be also permissible on Yom Kippur. Maybe that's what he retracted. Duma mehai hoder bay. How do we know that that's not what he retracted from? Gemara says, don't think that for a second. Also, because here we have a beferish statement, a braisa that says, the Tanya, kol chayav tfilos tovlin kedarkin. If anybody has an obligation to go and do a tvila, it's a mitzvah to do the tvila, so then he's allowed to go do the tvila on Shabbos, or bein b'tisha b'av, bein b'yom kippurim. Or he can do it on tisha b'av and yom kippur, which are days that you're not allowed to do rechitza shotaino, you're not allowed to do a pleasurable rechitza, so you can't go and bathe on tisha b'av or yom kippur. Tisha b'av, it's an issa d'rabbanan. On yom kippur, it's an issa d'araisa. So there are no situations where, even though it's forbidden for pleasure, that it's not permitted for a mitzvah tvila. So therefore, anybody that's chayiv in tefillah, hoel, since it's permitted in some situations, such as on Shabbos, so therefore it's permitted as well on Tisha B'Av and Yom Kippur. So we know that that wasn't retracted. If Rava didn't retract, because the Brisa doesn't retract this idea of hoel, so then the only thing left is to say that Rava has to retract his teretz, that kan lifnei tibul, kan lifnei la'achar tibul, to explain the difference between the Mishnah and Brisa. Oh, that's a good raya. Now, do we paskin like this, as an aside? Do we say kol chayav tefilos tovlin kedarkan? So in the little Tosos over here, tovlin, he brings down from the first parak in Tainis that this is actually a machlokus. Poligale Ruchinim Skana Kohanim, he disagreed. Ruchinim Skana Kohanim disagrees with this idea that kol chayav tefilos tovlin kedarkan, that you're allowed to be tovel on Tisha B'Av Yom Kippur. And he says a famous statement, Omar, kedai hu beis elokeinu la'abed olof tefila achas b'shona. He says, a loss of the Beis HaMikdash is such a severe thing that it's worthwhile for us to even give up a tefillah shel mitzvah, that one day of the year on Tisha B'Av that he's talking about, and we shouldn't go and do a tefillah shel mitzvah on Tisha B'Av, and the Hilchos HaKavasa Kedama B'Yerushalmi. And in fact, Tosfos says we pass like this, which is in fact the halacha l'maisa, and therefore, while this statement of Hoel is true from the Braisa, it's not how we pass it. Then the Mishnah continues. It says, "Hachoshesh b'mosnov." If somebody has some sort of a wound in his loins, in his groin area, so we had said in the Mishnah that the Tanakama doesn't permit you to go and be soch with this special, very expensive shemen vered, whereas only the malachim, the b'nei malachim, do that. And Rabbi Shimon says everybody's a b'nei malachim in this regard. So Amar Rabbi Abba Bar Zavda Amar Rav. Now Rabbi Rav says it's the name of Rav. That's the critical thing over here. Halacha is like Rabbi Shimon. Halacha like Rabbi Shimon. We paskin like Rabbi Shimon, which is surprising. The Gemara says that implies Lameimra the Rav ki Rabbi Shimon Svirule. That implies that Rav holds like Rabbi Shimon. Now according to Rashi, this is an understanding that in all, see the three lines from the bottom in the Rashi Lameimra the Rav. Bekule with a kuf is the gear that we have. Then it says on the other Nami Omrim, Bekule throughout with a chaf, Shabbos Sviru like Rabbi Shimon. That Rav is in accord with Rabbi Shimon, just like over here in regards to the Shemin Vered. So Rashi says it means that he holds like Rabbi Shimon throughout the Gemara and Shabbos. There's no connection between this din of the Shemin Vered and, for example, the Shita of Dovish Eino Miskaved is Potter according to Rabbi Shimon, Chayiv according to Rabbi Yehuda. There's no direct connection according to Rashi. It means he just holds like Rabbi Shimon in the Gemara on Shabbos. Tosos doesn't like this, and Tosos says that this is in fact a situation of a Dovish Eino Miskaved as well. And therefore, that's why we're saying that Rav holds like Rabbi Shimon. Is that really true, that he holds a Dovish Eino Miskaved is Potter? Now we're going to say, V'omar Rav Shimi Barachia, Mishmei the Rav. Whether you hold like Rashi, that Rav is holding like Rabbi Shimon throughout Shabbos, and not just in this din, or you hold it like Tosos, that it's talking about the din of Dovish Eino Miskaved, that you're going to be potter like Rabbi Shimon, so that implies that Rav holds like Rabbi Shimon. But that's not true of Amar Rav Shimi Bar Chiya Mishmei de Rav. In the following scenario, which is certainly a case of a Dovish Eino Miskaved, if he held like Rabbi Shimon, he would say that you're allowed to do this. But here Rav says you're not allowed to do this. What is the case? Hai Misochraya de Naziosa. The Naziosa is a barrel. And they would go and, let's say, plug up the barrel. They would plug it up with some sort of a garment. They would put in there some sort of an absorbable material. Rashi says, a beged korchin bebar zechovis. They would stop up the spigot of the barrel. Mipnei she'ein hanekev shoveh. If it wasn't a perfectly good seal on it, so they have to make sure that the wine didn't leak out. So they would stop it up with some sort of a garment. They would absorb the wine. Now, we turn to Yom Beis. Asur lahatke biyom atava. So, this statement, which is from Rav, says you're not allowed to do this. You can't put in the beged in this neck of over here, because as you squeeze it in, it's going to squeeze out some of the wine. You don't care. It's going to go on the ground. You have no intention of squeezing over here. Alma lo siru like Rabbi Shimon, but Dov Shein Miskaved. You see that he says that it's usher. So Rav clearly holds like the opinion of Rabbi Yehuda. So how can you tell me that Rav holds like Rabbi Shimon? Either like Tosos, he holds straight out like Rabbi Shimon, you're saying, in Dovish Eino Miskaved, or like Rashi, that he says, well, if he holds like Rabbi Shimon in one area of Shabbos Mestam, he holds like Rabbi Shimon in all the other areas of Shabbos as well. So that's the kasha. How can you tell me that Rav holds like Rabbi Shimon? Here, clearly, he doesn't hold like Rabbi Shimon in regards to this piece of beged that you're squeezing out when you're putting it into the spigot, and Rav says you're not allowed to do that, even though you have no intention to benefit from the squeezed out wine. So the Gemara says, Bahihi, in this situation, no, Rav could hold like Rabbi Shimon. Afilu, Rabbi Shimon would say that this is forbidden. Why is that? Why would Rabbi Shimon prohibit you from squeezing out over here if it's a Dovish Eino Miskaved? Because this is the famous rule we've had multiple times. That Abaye v'Rava, that Amar Tavaya, both Abaye and Rava hold that Moda Rabbi Shimon, even Rabbi Shimon says, I normally hold the Dovish Eino Miskaved is permissible, except Bipsik Reishe Lo Yomuz. If it's a Bipsik Reishe, if the head will be cut off the chicken, won't the chicken die? As we said many times already. So therefore, you can't do something that will automatically, Vaday, 100% of the time happen and say, I'm not interested in that. No. Even though it's a Dovish Eino Miskaved, you had no intention for it, but if it's 100% going to happen, even Rabbi Shimon says a Bipsik Reishe is not allowed. So Rav could actually still hold like Rabbi Shimon in this situation, and therefore it's not a problem. Gemara says that's not right, though. Amar Rav Chiya Bar Ashi, Amar Rav, but Rav Chiya Bar Ashi said the name of Rav, that Rav Beferis holds like Rabbi Yehuda, halachic Rabbi Yehuda. So here we have Rav Chiya Bar Ashi saying that Rav holds like Rabbi Yehuda, and Rav Chanan Bar Ami, another Amor, says the name of Shmuel, Amar Shmuel, halachic Rabbi Shimon. So we have these Amorim saying what Rav's opinion is, like Rabbi Yehuda, and what Shmuel's opinion is, like Rabbi Shimon. Or others have it outright, that the statement wasn't made through the Stu Amorayim, Rav Chiya bar Avin, Masdei Lo Belo Gavri. Rav Chiya bar Avin, when he learned this, he said it directly, without having the intervening Amorayim saying it, Rav Chiya bar Ash saying in the name of Rav, and Rav Chanan bar Ami saying in the name of Shmuel. He said he learned it out straight out. Rav Amar Halach Rav Yehuda, Rav himself, I heard Rav himself say that the Halach is like Rav Yehuda, Adom Shein was Kavin Yechayefor, and Shmuel was the one that was the Meku position of Rabbi Shimon, Amar Halach Rabbi Shimon. So again, back to our original question, how can you tell me that Rav holds like Rabbi Shimon? Rav doesn't hold like Rabbi Shimon. Rav clearly holds like the opinion of Rabbi Yehuda. So Akasha returns to its original question. Why does Rav tell us in the Mishnah that the halacha is like Rabbi Shimon, that you're allowed to have everybody is considered bnei melachim and can go and anoint with their shemen verid, with this very expensive oil, on the wound that they have in their loins? Shmuel says, you're right. Elo Omar Rava. Rava says, Ani v'yarisha v'chabura targimno. I and the lion in our group will explain this. Who is the lion in the group? So Umanu, who is that? Rav Chiya bar Avin. This is the opinion of Rav Chiya bar Avin. So Rava and Rav Chiya bar Avin say, Halachik Rabbi Shimon. Rav says, I paskin over here like Rabbi Shimon. However, not for the reason that Rabbi Shimon paskins. Lav mitaimei. So therefore, I can paskin like Rabbi Yehuda throughout Shas and say that the Dov Shein Miskavin is Chayev, and yet still Paschal like Rabbi Shimon over here, but not for his reasoning. What is that? My halach Rabbi Shimon v'lo b'taimei. What exactly did Rava and Rav Chiya bar Avin mean to say when they said that Rav says, I paskin here like Rabbi Shimon, that you can use the Shem and Verit, everybody's considered b'nei melachim, but not for his reasoning? So it's as follows. Ilei ma halachik Rabbi Shimon d'shari. If you're telling me that we paskin over here like Rabbi Shimon, that across the board you're allowed to use this, but not for his rationale, not for his reasoning, that all Yisrael is b'nei melachim, because dilu Rabbi Shimon sover masi. The reason is that Rabbi Shimon holds that this is beneficial. It heals. And Rav sover lo masi. Rav sover that it doesn't heal. If you're telling me that's the reasoning, is that really true? V'sover Rav lo masi? Does Rav hold that it doesn't heal? It says over here, the b'nei melachim sochen agabi makusim, shem averit, they're using this very expensive oil to put on their wounds. So, mikal demasi, why would they do this if it didn't work? So obviously, they're not arguing about over here, does it work or does it not work? Elo, so what are they arguing about? Halach, what is Rav saying over here when he agrees with Rabbi Shimon, but not for his reasoning? Elo, halachik Rabbi Shimon d'shari. The halacha Rav says follows Rabbi Shimon, who says you're allowed to use this shem averit on wounds. Everybody can, but not b'lav mitaimei, not because everybody's b'nei melachim. Dilu Rabbi Shimon sovar af agav delo shliach shari. He says even though normal people don't do this on a regular basis, that's because it's too expensive. They don't have it. Nevertheless, he says everybody's b'nei melachim and you're allowed to use it. But that's not Rav's reasoning. Rav says yes, you're allowed to use it. But Rav sovar, if it's commonly used, ish shliach in, then you're allowed to use the shem and verit, not because everybody's b'nei melachim. It's because it's commonly used. So whether you're rich or whether it's commonly used, that's one din. V'ilo shliach, but if it's not prevalent, if it's not easily available, either because of money or for other reasons, then you're not allowed to use it because it's clearly showing that you're using it for medicinal purposes. So how come over here Rav says you're allowed to if he disagrees with Rav Shimon's reasoning? Uba asro de Rav, where Rav lived, shliach mishcho de varda. This rose oil was either not very expensive in that area, or it was very commonly done. Even the poorer people normally anointed themselves with the Shem and Verit. It was common, it was available, and therefore that's why Rav says we pass it like Rabbi Shimon, but not for his reasoning. Rabbi Shimon says everybody, kol Klai Yisrael, even if it's not Shriach, is allowed to use it. And Rav said, no, it's only because it's Shriach. That's why I'm saying we paskin like Rabbi Shimon, because in my neighborhood, it's shriach, and therefore the bottom line is we paskin like Rabbi Shimon, but not for his reasoning. Hadron alechashmona shvatzim, hadron alechashmona shvatzim, hadron alechashmona shvatzim. That concludes the beautiful 14th parak, and now we go to the next parak, the 15th parak, the Eluk Shar. This parak is going to be dealing with tying and untying knots. Now, those are two av malachos. A person is not allowed to make a permanent knot or untie a permanent knot on Shabbat. So the Mishnah begins. Ve'eluk sharim shechayavim aleihem. The following are the type of knots. Again, they have to be permanent knots and they have to be significant knots that you're not allowed to do on Shabbos to either tie them or untie them. And if you do that, you're over nisa deraisa. And if you did it by accident on Shabbos, it'll be a chiyav chatas. So he says examples of these permanent knots, these strong permanent knots, are kesher hagamalin, the kesher hasaponim. These are various ties that they would do in regards to camels. The Gemara will explain what they are. The kesher hasaponim, the certain ties that they do with boats. Ukishem shu chayev al kishuran, and just like you chayev, if you tie such knots on the camels or on the boats, kach hu chayev al heteran, if you untie them, you're also going to be chayev. Just like tying is, also untying is an issa d'araisa. Now, if this is something that's makalkel, so how come this is going to be a chayev? Normally we say if it's a negative, deconstructive action, so you're not chayev d'araisa. So Rashi reminds us that we learned in Paraklal Gadol that the people that were mitzayodei hachalazon shenitzrochim lefrokim lahatir kishrei rishoso sakayamos kidei lekatzron olachivon. The people that were trapped in chalazon, this mollusk, this certain type of creature that was in the Yam HaKineres, and they would need to go trap it, so sometimes they would need to make the nets wider, and sometimes they need to make the nets smaller. So they would be tying and untying various parts of the nets, and it was always for a constructive purpose. That's why untying is also a av malach. Fine, that's the opinion of the Tanakhama. Beir Omer, kol kesher shuyochol latiro biachas miyodav, any type of a knot that you can undo with one hand, by definition, that's not called a permanent knot, and ein chayav in olav. You wouldn't be chayav for untying such a knot on Shabbos, at least not in Issa Daraisa. It's not tied so tightly, if you can undo it with one hand, even though it may have been done on a permanent basis, Rashi says, afilu asol kayama, even though it was made to be a permanent knot, but since it can easily be untied, Rameir holds that by definition it's not a permanent knot. Now we go to the Gemara, it tells us what exactly are these permanent knots, this kesher hagamolan, the kesher asaponim that we're talking about. So the Gemara says, my kesher hagamolan, the kesher asaponim, what exactly are these knots? As we'll see, there are two knots that you make in regards to the camel, and there are two knots in regards to making the boat. One of them is an issa d'oraisa, one will only be an issa d'rabbanan. So the Gemara starts off by first suggesting that we're talking about the one that's really an issa d'rabbanan. So, ilema kitra de kotre bismama. Are we talking about the tie, the knot that you make, that's attached to the ring that is around the camel, that's put into the nose of the camel, and then that's the nose ring of the camel. That's, we'll see, that's the real knot. And now we tie the leash to that nose ring. So is that tie, that you tie the leash to the nose ring of the camel, is that what you're talking about? Likewise, the kitra, the kotre b'isterida, the knot that you tie to the ring that's tied to the boat. So you want to leash the boat, so to say. You want to connect the boat. You want to anchor the boat to the dock. So you tie a knot to the ring around the boat, and then you tie that to the anchor, you anchor that to the dock. So hi kesher shenu shokayamo, both of these situations, you're going to take off this knot from the camel, you're going to take off this knot from the boat. It's not a permanent knot, so therefore that's not an issa d'oraisa. That would be an issa d'rabbanan. The rabbi said we're not going to let you do this because you may come to do the real knots, so therefore that can't be what it's talking about. So what type of a kesher of the gamolin and the kesher of the saponim is considered this permanent knot that you're not allowed to tie on Shabbos, and if you do, you chayev achatas? So the Gemara tells us, elakitra dizmama gufei. It's the actual knot that you make in the nose of the camel. That you want to stay there forever. That's a permanent knot. Likewise, udi istrida gufa, and the knot that you make in the boat itself, that you're tying this ring in the boat, so therefore that never gets removed. You always want that ring there in the camel, you always want that ring there in the boat. That knot that you make is the permanent knot that we're referring to, that you chayev achatas for on Shabbos. But the knot that you're making to connect to that ring for the camel, or to connect that ring for the boat, that we'll see is only an issa d'rabbanan, because that you're going to do and undo as needed. So therefore, that's only an issa d'rabbanan, that's not a permanent knot. Fine. We'll see a little bit more about this in the next Mishnah, actually. Now we go quote the Mishnah, it says, Ramei Romer, kol kesher v'chule. Ramei said that any knot, even if it was originally made for permanent knot, but if it can easily be undone, it's not called a permanent knot. So, boy, Rav Achdavoy, who was he? He was Achui de Mar Acha. He was the brother of Mar Acha. That's the girsa that we have over here on the side. It says, de min Acha. He came from a place, Pirush Shem Mokom. So, Achdavoy, de min Acha. Okay, whoever it was, either he was the brother of Mar Acha, or it was Rabbi Achdavoy who came from a place called Acha. He said the following: Aniva l'Rav Meir Mahu, a bow. Aniva is different than a kesher. A bow. What would Rav Meir say about a bow? Do we say time of the Rav Meir Mishum the Yochol Latiro Biachas Miyodavu is his whole reasoning? Nothing to do with permanence. Nothing to do with whether it can stay there forever. It has to do with whether you can do it with one hand. So you can undo a bow with one hand, and therefore it would not be considered a permanent knot. Or do we say no? Time of the Rav Meir, Bishum de lo mahadek. Or do we say the reason because you can untie it with one hand, it's obviously it's not very tight. Implication being, if something could be tied very tightly, albeit you can still undo it with one hand, it would still be chayiv. What exactly is Rav Meir's svar over here? Is it the tightness of the knot? And normally a one hand can't untie such a knot. So even though you can, if it was tight, you'd be chayiv. Or we say, no, if you can untie it with one hand, we don't care whether it's tight or not. By definition, that means that it's not a permanent knot. So what is Rav Meir's understanding? Where it says teku. We don't have a clarkite. We don't have a clear understanding of Rav Meir. We leave this as a teku. Next Mishnah. Mishnah tells us, Yesh l'koch sharin shein chayvim aleim kikesher agamolim ukesher asaponim. There are certain types of knots that aren't considered permanent knots to be chayv you and isadaraisa. As we'll see, there's going to be chisuria maxer over here. We're missing something from the Mishnah. As opposed to, there are other types of knots which aren't permanent, but a chayv midirabonon, a potter of al-osr. But then the Mishnah gives a list over here, kosheres isha miftach chaluka. A woman is allowed to go and tie her dress together. What exactly does this mean? So they used to have ties on each side of her shoulder. Let's say they have on her left side and on her right side, Rashi says. And what they would do is then tie one to the other, and that's how they would button the dress, the shirt that the woman would be wearing. So this is permitted to tie. Kosheris isha miftach haluka. She's allowed to do this. Likewise, v'chutei svacha. If she has various strings or threads on her hair cover, on her hat, so she's allowed to tie those as well. They're not permanent. She's going to take it on, she's going to take it off. That's allowed. At least it sounds like it's allowed l'chatchila over here. Vishopiskya, if she has a girdle, Rashi says this is Azor Rochov, a wide belt, the Chutin Tluyin Beroshu, and it has some threads at its head, and these are used for tying it. So this is also all allowed to be tied. Uritsus Mino Vesando, the laces that you have, the straps that you have on your minol or sandal. A minol is a certain type of a shoe. A sandal is like a sandal. So you're allowed to tie these. Likewise, v'nodus yayin v'shemen. If you have some sort of a canteen, some sort of a jug that's filled up with wine or oil and you want to seal it, they didn't have glass bottles that had bottle caps, so they would seal off the liquid that they kept in their flasks, so they would go and seal it off with a tie. But you want to open it and close it. Open it and close it. So this is allowed. Ukderish albasa. Likewise, if you have a pot, so they would sometimes have to tie you off the top of the pot. They didn't have a lid, so they would sometimes just tie you off the top of the pot. So all of these are permissible. One is allowed to do all of these on Shabbos. That's the Tanakhama's opinion. And along comes Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov, and he adds over here, and he says, Eliezer ben Yaakov Omer, Koshrin lefnei abehema b'shul shalot teitza. You'd likewise be allowed to go and tie off the door of the barn over here so that the animal cannot get out. Well, that's an additional thing that Eliezer ben Yaakov permits. Gemara now starts off and says, Haguf akasha. It doesn't seem to make sense the way we read the Mishnah. As I already alluded to, there's going to be a chesuri mechsura. Amris, first you tell me, yesh ksharim she'ein chayavim aleim kikesher agamolim ukikesher asaponim. There are certain types of knots which aren't going to be an isadaraisa, but implying that there's an issa derabanan. They're not like the boat knot and the camel knot that we explained, or the actual knot in the camel's nose, the actual knot on the boat. Those are yisurim daraisa. So those are different than the type of knots that the Mishnah is telling us at the beginning of the Mishnah. Yesh kesharim she'ein chayom aleim kikesher agamolim ukikesher saponim. But that implies chiyuvu delek. It's not an issa deraisa, but ha yisuri ika. But it is an issa derabanan. And then you go and list v'hadutani all the things that you're allowed to do lechatchila that aren't in Issa d'Rabbanan, they're mutar lechatchila. Kosher is isha, miftach chaluka, a woman can go button up her dress, etc., etc., etc. That implies apilu lechatchila. It's mutar lechatchila. So we're missing something in the Mishnah, and that's what the Gemara answers. Hochi kamar. This is what you have to do in reading the Mishnah. Yesh kisharim she'ein chayavim aleim kikesher agamolim ukikesher asaponim. There are certain types of knots that are different than the issur d'oraisa knots of the boat and of the camel. And here's the part that's missing. Umay nihu, and what exactly are those? We turn to the Omer Aleph. This is referring to kitra dekotri bismama. This is the leash that you attach to the nose ring of the camel. The nose ring of the camel is a permanent knot, and then you attach a leash to that. That's a not permanent knot, but it's close enough that the rabbi said you're forbidden to do that. That's the issa derabanan tying that leash to the camel's nose ring, or the kitra, or the knot that you make, the kotre bisterida, the knot that you make that attaches to the knot that's the permanent knot on the boat. So both of these, while they're not an issa d'oraisa, chiyuv hudaleka, because they're not a fully permanent knot, you're undoing it and retying it at different times, but still, it's close enough to a permanent knot, because you're leaving it there for some period of time. Ha'isura ika. The rabbis did set up that this would be an issa d'rabbanan, because it's too close to a permanent knot. And then the Mishnah concludes and says, v'yeshin mutarim l'chatchila, as opposed to these other knots, which not only are not an issa d'oraisa, they're not even issa d'rabbanan. And what are examples of such? V'yesh mutarim l'chatchila, umay nihu, what are these? Ah, that's kosheres, miftechei chaluka, the woman can tie up over here the dress, or she can tie up her hat, or she can tie up the girdle, tie up your shoes or your sandals, or you can tie up the flask of the wine or the shemen, or you can tie up the pot cover. So all of these are mutar lechatchila. With this, we conclude today's shiur.